Hey everybody, Chris Fafalius here. If you enjoy One Hit Thunder, which I'm assuming you do considering you're listening to it right now, I want to tell you about another great music podcast on the Evergreen Podcast Network. It's called Riffs on Riffs. On this season of Riffs on Riffs, hosts Toby Braswell and Joe Watson are breaking down one iconic pop song each week. Everything from Taylor Swift's Cruel Summer to Journey's Don't Stop Believin' to Naughty by Nature's OPP. Each week, they crack open the song, trace its history, decode those cryptic lyrics, and unearth the hidden gems in its musical DNA. Not only do they dive into the song's history, lyrics, and impact, they also go down some fun and oftentimes hilarious rabbit holes. So yeah, if you're a fan of One Hit Thunder, I think you'll also enjoy Riffs on Riffs. So go hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out WeKnowPodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, WeKnowPodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice. This week, we're joined by Mike Myers of the Songwriting for Guitar podcast to discuss Gautier's heartbreaking mega hit from the summer of 2012, Somebody That I Used to Know. Should we all be addicted to Gautier's certain kind of sadness, or should we cut him off and make out like it never happened? Stay tuned for this fun dive into an artist that was surprisingly a one-hit wonder in the U.S. But that was love to make us still.
One hit is all you need to make the money guaranteed, and you can live off royalties forever. And it makes me wonder, is it just a wonder, or is it one hit thunder?
All right, Mike, so thanks for joining us today to talk about Gautier, or as you and I in Pittsburgh would probably call him, Gautier. I'm glad you could be here to talk about Gautier. This was a good choice, man. Was there a particular reason why you chose this one?
There was. Thanks for having me on, dude.
Yeah.
This is exciting. I've enjoyed the podcast, and so getting to dive in to, you know, a one-hit wonder. There were a couple on my list, but the more and more I thought about it, I'm so glad this one was the choice, because this was also the very first song I ever taught. So when I made that transition to teaching in like 2012, I had to do a test lesson. So this was the first song I taught in 2012 when I was doing my auditioning for being a teacher. The test lesson, she was like, oh yeah, I kind of want to learn Gautier, you know, or yeah, as I would say in Pittsburghese, Gautier. So I was
right
going through the song, and it was so interesting because the chord structure was so simplistic. It's like D minor,
yeah,
C during all that verse, and it's only at the chorus that suddenly the third chord comes in, which is like B flat, and it was so simplistic, but the song moves so quickly, you don't realize that it's like, what, 4 minutes and like 30 seconds or something, like 10 seconds. It's like such a interesting song musically, and it's done so much, but that is, to me, the quintessential one-hit wonder, because we've never had a follow-up to that song.
We have to address the fact that anybody listening in Australia is probably pulling their hair out. Like, how dare you? But yes, in every other country, I think,
yeah,
except for Australia, he was definitely a one-hit wonder. This song came out probably at the peak of, like, Matt Kelly doesn't listen to the radio. So my first exposure to this song was actually a cover. Everyone playing it on a single guitar cover that like went extremely viral. That was my first exposure to this song. And I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah, that cover was pretty good. I actually hadn't seen that before. Apparently that was like a very viral video. And we do have to make note, like Matt said, people in Australia might be bothered by us calling this a one-hit wonder, because actually Gautier won the ARIA Award as Australia's Artist of the Decade from 2010 to 2020. He was Artist of the Decade.
Wow.
So yeah, he's no joke in Australia.
I mean, that's just one of the many. He won the Most Outstanding New Independent Artist Award in 2006. The following year, he won Best Male Artist. And this is still like 6 years before this song hits in the States.
Yeah, yeah, he was already pretty well established. Before we get into all that stuff, charts and all that stuff, I do want to talk about the structure of this song. And Mike, you being a songwriter, I know too that you can appreciate all this stuff, because I really did some research on like, okay, this song stands out because of the instrumentation and like what's going on. It's very different. It's not your standard pop song. There's definitely some differences here.
There's absolutely some differences. Like, to me, again, the simplistic chord structure, I think this was also a turn when I started, because I didn't listen to the radio, but once I started teaching, I was like, that's pretty much all I was listening to. And it was, this is where songs were taking a turn to a lot more simplistic chord structures. And I think just the percussiveness of just a simple guitar at the beginning that just loops around. And a lot of this is loops, because even when you see them play live in studio, it's all like he has like those little push pads that are just kind of activating all those instrumentations and backing tracks.
Well, something I didn't know until I did the research is that that main, you know, acoustic guitar riff is actually a sample from a Brazilian jazz musician named Luis Bonfa. It's a song called Seville. So if you listen to it, you'll be like, oh, yeah, that's it.
The other piece that I should have known, but until I saw it in writing didn't click to me, is that the xylophone is just playing the first 9 notes of Baba Black Sheep.
Yeah. I didn't realize that either. And I saw some people say that it's also a take on Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. All those nursery rhymes are very similar. But yeah, it's Baba Black Sheep. And that's a really good point. I'm not sure if that's a xylophone or a glockenspiel. I think you're right. I think it's a xylophone, right?
Yeah.
Mike, as you being a songwriter and a teacher and everything, I wanted to talk to you about this concept that Matt just brought up. Is this thing that I've noticed in popular music, and especially I just recently did an episode of someone else's podcast about Blink 182, and I brought this up in that episode, not even thinking about the fact that we were doing this episode, but this concept of using nursery rhyme melodies in pop music, and people subconsciously, their ears are attracted to that. Blink 182 does it like crazy. I swear every Blink 182 hit is some sort of simplistic nursery rhyme style melody. And this song for sure has it in the Baa Baa Black Sheep. And I will say that even my band has been guilty of it at one point. And I'm going to point this out, and I don't know if people would have noticed this. If you happen to like my band, we have this song from back in 2006, and it's from our album 37 Everywhere. And the song is called For the Second Time, which I always jokingly say is my least favorite Punchline song ever. It's a very like over-the-top emotional ballad that's like a real bummer. But in the bridge of it, to match up with like the lyrical content, the guitar lead is London Bridge. It's the melody of the London Bridge melody. I think this is a very common thing in pop music. Were you ever think about this at all?
I do. I think it's because we want melodies that pull someone in that feel familiar, but isn't like a slight ripoff, but at the same time is easy to digest, easy to replicate and hold on to. And that's why I think nursery rhymes are great, because when you're a kid, these are things you're constantly singing. Everyone knows, regardless of whether they feel they can sing it in pitch or in tone, they can replicate it back. And so it makes sense that if you're trying to do something that's commercial, popular, gain notoriety, make it memorable, make it simple. And so to make that connection between the two and modify it, Like, it's almost like sometimes I feel like certain songs growing up, I remember like the na 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 na, that sort of like even rhythmic pattern of na 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 is used consistently because it just stays with you.
It's so funny you say that. You're talking about like when you're like teasing somebody and you go na 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 na. Well, when you did that, you know what the first thing I thought of was?
What?
That Journey song that goes na 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 na.
And my brain went My Chemical Romance. The na 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 na.
It's definitely a thing. And when I did some research on it, I saw some comments about people saying that not only are those nursery rhymes familiar, but they're also soothing. That's a very good thing to say about this song, about somebody that I used to know, that when it starts, you're coming right with that melody right off the bat, and it sounds soothing. And it isn't until the chorus that it becomes not so soothing, but that those first two verses, they're very soothing, calming. Even the way he's singing is very subdued and chill.
I think that line too is a great representation of something that's multi-purpose. Like when it's meant to be the hook, it's the hook. When it's buried behind when he's singing, you don't know. It fits it and complements it, but it's multi-purpose. So it's not just like, I think from being, you know, from a punk background at first, I was always like hammering on large guitar lines and then suddenly there was nothing. But to have a line that fits all throughout the song,
right,
is predominant now in music, where you're finding that constantly.
Yeah, it becomes the focal point of your ears at the beginning, and then it goes off into the background, along with the bongos. And the bongos and the percussion in the song are played in a tango pattern, which I wouldn't have necessarily recognized. But if anyone's wondering, that what you're hearing in the background there is what is predominantly used in tango music.
I also want to draw attention, as we're talking about the weird composition of this song, the first two verses, the rhyme scheme is really weird, right? Because you've got like, now and then I think of When We Were Together, rhyme, we'll call that rhyme one. Yeah. Like when you said you felt so happy you could die, that doesn't rhyme, so we'll say that's number two. You told myself that you were right for me, three, but I felt so lonely in your company, three. But that was love, and that's an ache that I still remember. Back to the first line rhyme. And then that first line rhyme comes back in at the end of the second verse, but it's not at the start of the second. Like, it's very interesting how it walks that line of, like, a non-rhyming poem, but it does have a very abstract rhyme scheme simultaneously.
Matt, do you know what this is?
I
don't know if you don't realize what this is. These verses are limericks. These are limericks. Oh. That's the flow of a limerick. And yeah, usually in a limerick, that second line would rhyme too. But if you were like saying this as if it was a dirty joke, you would say, now and then I think of when we were together, like when you said you felt so happy you could die, told myself that you were right for me, but felt so lonely in your company, but that was love and it's an ache I still remember. That would be to the, what's that like limerick that everyone, there was an old band from Nantucket. I feel like that's the start of the joke, and I never know what the actual end of that joke is. I assume it's something that ends in fuck it. Right?
I know that I'll say that the second part ends around so big he could suck it. I know.
Okay. All right. Okay. That makes sense. All right.
You're right. This is like a limerick. Right. It's just it's not a normal thing for a pop song.
Right.
To have a limerick rhyme scheme.
Yeah. And Mike, to your point about that simplistic, well, what is a sample, but that guitar riff is there's a back and forth to it. It's just back and forth and back and forth. And that back and forth is also reflected in the lyrics, that you have this back and forth. That's the whole theme of the song, right? You're hearing this song. Eventually, Kimbra comes into the song, by the way, Kimbra is awesome. In preparation for this episode, Kimbra was an artist where I was like, oh, why have I never listened to Kimbra before? And that's why I'm so glad we do this podcast when this kind of stuff happens. But this song is you're hearing this song, a back and forth between two people's perspective of a breakup, you know? So the whole time you're hearing that first two verses, chorus, you're hearing it from Gautier's perspective, aka Gautier, aka Wally DeBacker. Wally DeBacker, you're hearing his perspective, but then you're hearing Kimbra's perspective. So, you know, you could listen to this song being in his shoes or her shoes, depending on what your situation was in a relationship. And it's almost like the music reflects that, if that makes sense.
And if you take that intro guitar, that guitar part, so the guitar is going back and forth, so there's constant movement between that dun 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 dun. But his melody at the first start of the line, now and then, is really flowing and not fast paced. So it's almost like you're mm-hmm. getting that contrast where the guitar takes care of that rhythmic back and forth, but his melody is flowing, and so they're not kind of fighting each other; they're working together, which makes it. Draws you in automatically.
Mm-hmm. It is. It did sound way different. Still sounds way different than anything you would hear on pop radio, which all builds up to that chorus, which, oh, baby, is that a chorus? Because he's made you wait for it. You know, you've been waiting. Like, you've gone through two verses, an intro and two verses, and you haven't even hit it yet. But once you hit it, wow. It is... so fun to sing along with. And Mike, we did a episode about EMF Unbelievable at one point where for the whole episode, we were doing, ohs! That was a whole episode full of that. But how fun is this song? Because you get to hit almost, it depends on where your voice lies. For me, it's right at that point of maybe cracking in that first verse, which is that real nice when you could hit that. Then the second line comes back down and you get to go falsetto. It's so fun to sing along to. And I got to do it right now just to show how fun this is, because you get to go, but you didn't have to cut me off. Make out like it never happened and that we were nothing. I don't even need your love, but you treat me like a stranger and it feels so rough. Yeah, I mean, when you're in your car and that is full blast and you're feeling those emotions, because, dude, that's something about this song that, mm-hmm. I mean, music aside, we could talk about the music theory of why this song is appealing all day, but these lyrics are ultra relatable. I would venture to say that 99.9% of people could relate to this song.
And I think that that's even reflected in when you look at like the laundry list of people who've covered this song. Mm-hmm. Like, this song fits in with almost every genre. Like, when I'm looking at the list and I'm like, all right, Pentatonix, yeah, I could see this being great as an a cappella song. Like, Ingrid Michaelson, totally. Fun yeah. with Hayley Williams, absolutely. But then you dabble into like Coheed and Cambria, Mayday Parade, and 3 Days Grace, and it's like, yeah, that also all like that all checks out. The weirdest one, obviously, I love it. Weird Al does a cover of it in one of his polkas. Like, any genre, it sounds good. Like, it has that raw emotion. And this was in such a weird summer. Like, I want to talk about the summer of 2012 for just one quick second, because for the most part, if you look at like all the songs that were number one hits, they were like a hit for maybe a week or two, yeah. right? You had like LMAFO, Bruno Mars, Rihanna, Taylor Swift. These were the three songs that were the longest seated number one Billboard song in order of like, I'll just... Fun We Are Young sat at number one for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Super indie song. It got beat out. It got dethroned by Gautier, which sat there for 8 weeks. So we had an entire summer of indie rock. And who came to bring the pop back and dethrone Gautier? Carly Rae Jepsen, Call Me Maybe, which sat yeah. at number one for 9 weeks. It was like we had had our sad boy summer, and now it was like, yo, we need to fucking party now. Let's get some get Carly Rae on the line. It's time to dance.
That was a good summer of music. I really think. I mean, I love Carly Rae even, you know. I think that's great.
I think everybody knows you love Carly Rae.
Yeah.
Totally unrelated. And it's Everybody Talks, Neon Trees. That was another one during that whole summer, I think, was around that. Because I remember that whole season of teaching Call Me Maybe,
yeah.
Taylor Swift, but yep. fun too. And it was just a really obscure summer.
Yeah, the day that this topped out at number one, it was April 28th, 2012. Also on the top 10 was like One Direction, What Makes You Beautiful, Justin Bieber, Boyfriend, and Nicki Minaj, Starships were like among the top 10 songs. And then also while those are on there, We Are Young and Call Me Maybe are also in the top 10 simultaneously. Like, it was a pretty good, diverse top 10 Billboard chart.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And, you know, we're talking about how, you know, I believe this is pretty much a perfect song. I think at the time, maybe, I think I heard both of you guys reference this. I think maybe I wasn't paying attention very much to what was popular. And I think when I heard this song, it was already after there was a bit of a backlash against it. I think people were just sick of it. I think maybe it was one of those deals where, yeah, it was number one for 8 weeks or something, and people were getting tired of it pretty quick. To match the perfect song, however, there was also a perfect music video that went along with it. That music video, which now has 1.8 billion views on YouTube.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind, and right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick, and usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work, but we talk about decidedly not-so-grown-up things like...
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from niche music podcasts that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.
I mean, we're talking about a song that is still considered one of the best-selling digital singles of all time because it sold over 13 million copies digitally alone. This song was insanely massive, but I mean, we've talked about it on this podcast. There is a very common theme of bands having a massive first single and then people get burned out. Like, we even got to talk to Scott from Dishwalla, and he said, like, we wanted to put out another single, and the record label was like, Counting Blue Cars is still crushing on the radio. We can't muddy the waters. He even said, like, in retrospect, I think that hurt us because, like, people just got sick of hearing that song.
Right. It's a fine balance there.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, the videos that you mentioned. Like, there are so many parody videos. Like, they're countless. And even the crappiest parody video still has like a million plays.
Yeah.
And they're so diverse, too.
Well, I think that comes into, like you said, it's like this soothing nursery rhyme. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it is perfect background noise. You know what I mean? Because it's not like overly complicated. Like, this is when you think of like song that's playing when you walk in Starbucks. Like, this is like the soundtrack to like someone going to get coffee, because it is so, it's got that repetitiousness to the two chords. It's until the chorus hits, it's very like whispery and soft. So like, it's similar to what I was saying when we did our Frontier Psychiatrist episode with drum covers, right? Like, because it's a steady beat for the entire song, that means that someone could do a really interesting, intricate drum cover. And we've seen some amazing guitar covers of this song, because you basically are, the normal riff of the guitar is just a bass line back and forth between two notes. So you can have someone like a Mike Dawes who's like, I'm going to play multiple parts of this song simultaneously on the guitar because I just need to keep that one bass line going back and forth. and then I can get really technical and weird on it. Like, I think that when something is so simple, it allows for so much experimentation to come out of it, too.
And the melody does a line plus three. I took a melody class, like, a long time ago, and he pointed out that hit songs have this kind of three hook. So if you think of the, but you didn't have to cut me off, no, 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 happened and now we were nothing. He's taking words and making it a three. He'll say a phrase, then take either two words or one particular like word, cut it up, and then it's a three. And instinctively, we're like, that's a hook. And it just grills it in our head over and over.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, we've talked about that too. The songs where it's like, there's so many hooks. This song, there's not really a non-catchy part to it. It's weird because it's catchy, but it's also like one of those things where like, if you were to hand me these lyrics without me having context of the song, I would be like, this isn't going to work. Like this, like lyrically, it doesn't feel like it would be something that like people would be able to quickly memorize and like sing along with from start to finish. But it works. It just works.
Hey, I got to talk about Kimbra's part a little bit too, because just from an instrumentation standpoint, I believe that is the first part of the song where you hear the mellotron come in. And I am a sucker for some mellotron, man. And yeah, and her voice fit perfect. So there was supposed to be some Australian superstar, not specified who it was, but was supposed to do the female part. I don't know. I don't know who it is. They didn't say. And then after, they tried it with Gotye's girlfriend at the time.
He said it was too happy. It was like, it was too nice. And it was like, it was supposed to be this mournful part, but she ends up being like, the happiness came through and he didn't like it.
But then Kimbra came along and it just worked perfectly. I can't imagine another voice being in there. Her voice sounds amazing in this song. And once again, lyrically, you hear it from her perspective where she's basically saying, she heard you talk, Gotye, about other women saying this same thing. I don't know. You can decipher it however you want, but basically you're saying it from her perspective. We've probably all been in both sides of this. I feel like I've been in Gotye's side of this a lot more. And I will say, and I don't know if you guys are this way, but from a personal aspect, I don't know if this is a good quality in myself or a bad quality, but when someone does me wrong, and I'm not saying something little, but I'm saying something like bad, I cut them off forever. I am very good at cutting people off and never talking to them for the rest of my life. I think it's a good thing. I think that I'd rather, you know, if someone does something that bad, I'm good at being like, nah, fuck you. I'm good. You know, I've always been that way.
I'd say at this point, I'm pretty good at just being like, I'm done. Like, I don't have time. It's just, I think I used to be the puppy dog that was like, come on, I'll give you. No,
I don't
prioritize
them anymore for sure, but I don't also like completely wipe their existence out of my
someone's dead to me, they are dead to me. And I'm not saying it's a big, long list of people, but, and I feel like maybe when I was younger, you know, relationships end sometimes. And I think that maybe I was a little harsh about that when I was younger. But I think at this point in my life, if at this point in my life, I cut you off forever and you're dead to me, you must have done some serious shit.
Yeah.
I will hold that till my grave for sure. This song's awesome. And I dug more into Gotye's catalog, which I hadn't done before preparing for this episode. I found that he has a real sort of Peter Gabriel aesthetic to him, sometimes in his delivery, sometimes in the creativity of his music, and especially in his music videos. And when I dug into more of his music videos, I was like, damn, how did this guy not have another hit? And I really believe that had Gotye happened 20 years earlier at the height of MTV, that he would not have been a one-hit wonder.
Well, Gotye didn't really help his case because when this song was at its peak, he also decided he was quitting music. So yeah, like he went on a hiatus from creating music. He still continued to like, he started an indie record label and stuff like that. And I think he still plays occasionally. I know last year he put out a live album. He's starting to consider doing a fourth album. I think as recently as 2018, he said, maybe there's a fourth Gotye album in me. I guess it's, I'm sitting there being like, it's weird to like quit at your biggest hit, but then also the reality is like, he'd been doing this shit for 12 years by the time this was his biggest hit. So like, there could be a little bit of like, I already said all the things I want to say. If you want more of my stuff, there's two whole other albums you can go and check out.
And I think it's a performance thing too, because I was looking at a lot of like live performances he did. Like he did Saturday Night Live. He did some in studios. It was very kind of cold a little bit. It was not really. And what I love about the song is the backing layers. Like his voice sounds so good, tripled, quadrupled, and all the harmonies. And so they have that in the live setting, but it's kind of like, I kind of want to listen to the song.
Yeah.
Like it's like, I'll listen to the song.
I'd rather a band be a little sloppy live, but like really energetic, than like it sounds exactly like the record, but it also feels like I'm just listening to the record and staring at a poster. Like, I mean, I think the Beatles nailed it though, when they were basically just like, fuck it, we're not playing live anymore. We're just going to hang out in a studio and just bang out records like every couple months. Like, I kind of wish that he would have just done that and been like, all right, I'm not going to do the live thing anymore, but I'm just going to like lock myself in a studio for the next decade, just like creating music as it comes to me.
I mean, he also plays in a band called The Basics, so I think he gets out his musical urges through that. But I'm about to make you guys really love Gautier right now.
Okay.
Some things I'm about to tell you. Now, Mike and I don't have this luxury, you know, of being like, oh, we don't care about money. We got to pay our bills when it comes to music. And I would love to reach that point where money doesn't matter anymore. You know, like I think that would be amazing to just create music and not worry about the other aspects of it. But, you know, and I don't know Gautier's financial situation. I'm assuming with this gigantic hit song that it's probably pretty good. But, you know, he said that he would maybe make another album in the next decade. And I respect that he wants to make another album when he artistically feels like he wants to make it and not because it's a cash grab or something. But everything I've read said that Gautier doesn't care about money. He doesn't monetize his YouTube channel, which, by the way, like I said before, the music video for this song has 1.8 billion views. So that's some serious money that Gautier is just like, nah, I'm good on that.
Yeah, just leave it on the table.
Obviously, Luis Bonfa's people came after him because of the sample. So instead of going to court, Gautier was just like, nah, just give him half. He gave him 50% of all the money made from the song. He doesn't sell his music for commercials, doesn't allow his music to be used in commercials. He encourages artists to use the song free of charge for remixes and on indie film soundtracks. He encourages people, just use it for free. I really haven't heard of anything like that before. Probably the closest thing I've heard to that before was the producer Steve Albini, who famously didn't take points on Nirvana's In Utero, even though that was a very commonplace thing to do and would have resulted in easily millions of dollars for him. But no, he just said like, nah, I just recorded it. So that's the closest thing I could think to that, to what Gautier has done here. I think that's pretty cool. Once again, we don't all have that luxury. A lot of us have to take the money where we can get it, you know, but hey, props to Gautier for that. He sounds like true artist.
For sure. And I want to highlight two things that he pulled off with this song when it came out was that he became the first Australian artist to hold the number one single and the number one album in Australia since Silverchair in 2007, which I think is awesome. And he was the first Australian artist to reach number one since Savage Garden in 2000. And all I've learned from this podcast is every time we're talking about an Australian artist, they're fucking dope. So maybe we should open that gate a little bit more to their music, because 13-year gaps in between artists seems like a really bad idea.
Dude, Australia, New Zealand, it's like every artist I hear, and I know that Australians and New Zealanders wouldn't want me to hear them grouping them together, but, you know, I'm just a dumb American who groups New Zealand and Australia together. But you know, Kimbra's a New Zealand artist, mm-hmm. whereas Gautier's a Australian artist. So, you know, they kind of collaborated here. And maybe my impression of that is all from Flight of the Conchords. I believe there is a lot of Australian / New Zealand rivalry on Flight of the Conchords. Mike, you had pointed out Benny. I just this week I was running on the treadmill and I always listen to my new music playlist. And mm-hmm. the New Zealand artist Benny, who I really love, just did a cover of this song. New Zealand is, even though I haven't been there, it is my dream place to live because everything seems so awesome from there. I love the music. I love the comedy. It appears to be beautiful. They didn't have COVID. Like, they did a real good job of not having a pandemic there, which is a very good quality in a place that I want to live. I know my girlfriend and I were looking at, like, cost of living there and stuff, and I think it is, like, kind of expensive depending on where you live, and maybe the job market isn't that great. Maybe you got to go in there and get a decent job. But if I should ever become very rich, I would like to relocate to New Zealand and take all my family and friends with me. That would be my goal, is just take everyone I know and go to New Zealand.
You are not the only person that has said that. I feel like I've heard that. Yeah, I was in a coaching call last week and somebody talked about he was making plans. He was like organizing how much it would cost to move to New Zealand because he was like, this seems like the ideal place.
Mike, you want to talk about being an ideal place, especially for musicians. Now, it's not ideal because touring would be very hard, but we had the band The Beths on Krista Makes a Podcast, and the lead singer, Liz, was talking about how in New Zealand, the government will give you funds to go on tour. Like, the government gave them like $20,000 to be able to go on tour and leave the country and everything. That's pretty badass too, that they encourage the arts like that.
That's amazing. And I think you know, Canada has tons of different opportunities too for artists to fund, because I've had Canadian friends being like, I did this retreat, or I went on this tour and it was funded. And it's like, shit. And like, here we are in America, we're sleeping in a Walmart parking lot. It's like, what the hell?
On top of that, New Zealand isn't even cold. You know, anyway, we're all moving to New Zealand when we can. Mike, we got to decide. I think that like this is going to be a pretty easy one.
Wouldn't it be wild if we all said Blender? Yeah.
No, I'm going to say that Gautier brought the one hit thunder for sure. In fact, I think he might be. We did rankings last year of all the episodes we did, and Duncan Sheik was our most thunderous artist of last year. This might be the most thunderous artist that we've done yet, in my opinion, on this podcast.
That's pretty impressive, because In a Big Country is also in the contention for this year, and that is, you've been very open that is your favorite one hit wonder.
You reminded me. Maybe I'll have to think about that when we do our recap, Matt. But but what do you think, Mike? One hit thunder or one hit blunder?
Oh, one hit thunder. I mean, we I don't know if we mentioned, but he won a Grammy for Album of the Year.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, one hit thunder for me.
And Mike, if people enjoy hearing your voice, is there other places where they can go to hear your voice?
Absolutely. They can go to the Songwriting for Guitar podcast to hear my voice. And if they're a songwriter and they're like, I suck at guitar, I need help, if you go to songwritingforguitar.com, there's tons of free resources that they can check out.
I can't recommend the Songwriting for Guitar podcast enough, especially since I edit it. and I've edited a lot of good episodes. There's a lot of good conversation about songwriting and things related to songwriting. You should all subscribe to it right now. And Mike, thanks for coming on, man. I hope you had fun.
Dude, I had fun. This was great, guys. Thanks for having me.
This bed's got too much room. I might need another cover.
This has been One Hit Thunder. One Hit Thunder is hosted by Chris Fafalios of the bands Punchline, Pack, and Another Cheetah, and produced by Matt Kelly of Geekscape.net. Underneath me, you're hearing For the Second Time by Punchline off their album 37 Everywhere. Visit punchline.com for info on future Punchline shows, releases, and merchandise. Punchline is playing Anti-Fest on November 20th at the Roxanne Theater in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Come check out the show and say hello to me if you see me there. Do you want to hear your song on the show or have any interest in sponsoring an episode? Contact me at matt@geekscape.net for our rates. If you have any interest in podcasting, visit weknowpodcasting.com for how Matt and Chris can make your show sound as professional as possible. Let us know your thoughts on the show by emailing us at onehitthunderpodcast@gmail.com. Make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on your favorite podcasting app. And tune in next week for another episode of One Hit Thunder.
Everyone, I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Minahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media Podcast Network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.